Without the two women who have joined us in our studio, a whole number of hit records wouldn't have sounded half as good. Though you'll know the names on the album cover, probably not theirs. That's because they were the backup singers for the likes of the Rolling Stones, Dionne Warwick, and Aretha Franklin, and so many others. But now filmmaker Morgan Neville has shown a special spotlight on Darlene Love and Mary Clayton, among others. And in his new documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom, for once, Bruce Springsteen, Stevie Wonder, Sting, and Mick are the ones taking the back seat. The film opens this Friday at the Angelica and the Eleanor Bunin Theaters, and I'm very pleased that Mary Clayton, Darlene Love, and Morgan Neville could all join us today. Hi.
Hi.
And we went in with Mary singing Lift Every Voice, the so-called Negro National Anthem.
Right.
That's from your new album, The Best of Mary Clayton?
Yes, it is.
Morgan, you've done a number of documentaries about artists like Pearl Jam, Muddy Waters. So was it a natural progression to do this?
It was a very different kind of story because it's not a story of anybody you really knew. It's not a rock star or a blues star or a country star. It was something I didn't know much about, which is what interested me about it. You know, it was just something that I thought was a gaping hole in my music knowledge. And what I realized is nobody knew anything about
backup
singers. So you
hadn't paid much attention to the backup singers before you started working on this?
I guiltily admit I hadn't, but I wasn't alone because...
But I'll bet that when you heard favorite songs that you wound up singing with the backup group, you didn't wind up singing the lead.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
So true.
And, you know, what I did when I started the film is I just started retraining my ear and I'd listen to radio and I'd start hearing these amazing backup parts in songs I'd heard 1,000 times and never realized I was singing along with the backup singers.
Darlene, do you feel, and I ask you this too, Mary, that there's something a little condescending about the term backup singer, especially when in any number of cases you probably sang better than the lead singers?
No, and we get that question often because as background singers, we're supposed to be their background. We're supposed to be their backbone, help them wherever they need help. And it was great because, see, back in those days, we had so much fun doing that. So it's never has been that.
I mean, I'm sorry. Just hanging with each other, being able to go to the studio, dress up, look cute, smell good, and be wonderful. And you know, it was like, I'm going to work with Darlene today and Fanita, or I'm going to work with Edna, I'm going to work with Clydie King. Ooh, we're going to have fun. I wonder what we're going to have for lunch. I wonder who the artist is. I wonder what songs we're going to sing. Baby, we're going to wear them out when we sing it. You know what I mean? That was the great thing about
singing. And did you find yourself finding your parts immediately? Because you knew each other?
Well, especially because of the Blossoms. The Blossoms were the background singers in L.A. in the late 50s and the early 60s.
That's where you got started.
And there were no black women singing background yet.
None.
Not in the record business. And the Blossoms was already...
Well, there were the Raylettes. No?
No, babe. We was full of Raylettes. Oh. See, I'm talking about 1957, 58, 59. But the Raylettes was a part of Ray Charles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They weren't singing background on nobody's records.
Mm-hmm.
They were singing with Ray Charles.
And they were on the road.
The difference was we were in the studio with all these people.
But, Darlene, you also sang lead, often anonymously.
Yes.
So was that background singer or was that lead singer without credit?
When we did that, especially before I met Phil Spector, instrumentals. You know, like with, what's his name, Caps. We were with Glenn Campbell. And they weren't singing, so they wanted us to do oohs and ahs and every now and then sang some words or every now and then let me stick my voice out and everything. Most people knew that was the Blossoms, but we were never talked about, you know, as that's who that is. We were the Playgirls. We were a little bit of everybody. They always would give us a name, you know. So it was fun.
Well, one thing is, you know, when I brought up Milli Vanilli to these guys who were famous for not actually having sung their hit, you know, what did you guys say?
I said, you got to be kidding. We do that all the time. Long before them.
You mean you would just mouth the words in the back because there was so much noise?
No. We actually, they were.
Oh, you sang for the Milli Vanillis.
No. Let me tell you.
Explain it, honey. Explain
it. It's really crazy. They didn't have anybody to be Milli Vanilli.
Because
they went in the studio and recorded this great record, but they had nobody to. They had session singers that did it. We didn't want to go out on the road. So they found these two guys who were a group and said, well, we're going to make you
Milli Vanilli. Right.
And they just went out, learned the song, and started working with it. Well, that's exactly what we did with the Crystals, with Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans. We recorded it, but the Crystals went out and became the Crystals.
Mm-hmm. Now, why did Phil Spector do that
because
to you?
Because he was a jackrabbit.
So if they hadn't sent him to prison for murder, would you have wanted him to be punished for what he did to you?
No. See, at first it started out with Phil, with He's a Rebel. I knew that song was going to be a Crystal record. So I just say, hey, this record ain't nothing. I'll just charge him, sing it, and go on about my business. That's how it started. Mm-hmm. Then when the record...
So then the Crystals had to learn what you and the Blossoms
and matter of fact, how they learned it, they were out on the road with Gene Pitney, who wrote He's a Rebel. Mm-hmm. And he actually, the record was already going up the charts, and they didn't know it. He actually taught them the song doing a show that they were doing backstage. That's when they learned He's a Rebel. They had never even heard it. They didn't even know what Phil Spector had recorded that record and put it out under their name.
Now, Mary, you started in church like so many of the people who wound up doing background singing. Mm-hmm. But in your case, you were a preacher's daughter. Did you have any choice?
Absolutely. Darlene was preacher's daughter, too. We were all preacher's kids.
That's right.
Did you wind up doing solos? When did you realize that you had something special, you had a special voice?
When I was four. We lived in New Orleans. And in New Orleans, there was a truck that would come down the street every day, and it would play music. So I'm told, my mother told my sister the story, that every day that this truck would come by, I would run to the front porch. In New Orleans, you have big wraparound front porches, and I would run to the front porch. There was a certain song that they would play called I Heard the News, There's Good Rockin' Tonight. So I'd learn this song, and I would be, when the truck would come, he would invariably play that song. So here I am, running to the front porch, standing back in my legs, my sister tells the story, singing, I heard the news, there's good rockin' tonight. And my mother would say, you cannot sing, you heard the news, there's good rockin' tonight. You're a preacher's child. She snatched me off, you can't do that. You know, but that's when I started singing. That's secular music. But my parents, my mom, my dad, they never cared about, because my dad was a singer and played piano. They never cared about, don't sing the devil's music. Never said that. When you sang,
but all those old, yeah, the gospel singers in the 50s and 60s used to say, I'm going to rock for what Jesus and roll for the Lord.
Yeah.
So
they, yeah, that's
well,
what
not
they
only
said.
That, rock and roll wasn't even allowed to be played in my house. Mm-mm. When I heard records, it was at my girlfriend's house. We did not listen
and
to that
to
kind of music
sneak,
in our
kind
house.
Of sneak a little bit to listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
And, Darlene, when did you discover that you had a special
voice? I didn't.
Voice?
I think it was all a game to me. I used to sing in church all the time, and I knew I had a pretty good voice, but mm-hmm. then I started going to this church in L.A. called St. Paul Baptist Church.
Ooh, one of the greatest gospel choirs.
And where Cora Martin was the director, and she heard something in my voice. This was a choir of 150 voices, mm-hmm. and then she called me.
Earl Hines was
a great
lead singer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, Hines. I mean, everybody that
and
was
Cora
a gospel
Martin
singer.
Was Sally Martin.
Sally Martin's
a
legend, daughter.
So she was her sister,
right.
Her adopted daughter.
So
that's
we right. were, you know, she had a place called the Music Mark on Central Avenue in Los Angeles. And she said, you're coming down to rehearse today. And that was actually the first real time I went, wow, I guess I can
say. I am.
But neither of you went into gospel.
No. I think it's because we sang it so much. We were around all the gospel greats, you know, and like I wanted to sing gospel, but I wanted to sing like Marian Anderson. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I didn't want to be like the Caravans or the Davis Sisters or James or, you know, all of them. I just wanted to sing mm-hmm. and not
but you wound
even
up singing
closely.
Like the Davis Sisters.
Exactly.
And the Caravans.
Well, that's the only music we really knew. That's what we came up with.
So, Morgan, did you think about whether this is a matter of talent? Because why do some lead singers, why do some people become lead singers and others become background singers?
Well, it's definitely, definitely not a matter of talent. Let me just say that. You know, talent is second or third down the list in the reason, you know, why certain people become stars. I mean, that's part of what the film's about. And, you know, when people have asked me what's the difference between a lead singer and a backup singer, I say a hit. You know, because sometimes it's that simple. Because if, you know, Mary or Darlene had a big hit in the 70s, you know, they'd be Patti LaBelle or Chaka Khan or something. I mean, they're absolutely on that level as artists.
But it's also a matter of getting somebody to write songs for you or writing them for yourself, isn't
it?
And
having a great producer, having a great record company. And as in my case, you know, I had a great producer. I thought he was one of the greatest producers. I was under the auspices of a great, great record company, A&M. You couldn't get any better than
that. And Lou Adler was your producer.
Absolutely. But, you know, still, as he said in the film, no matter what I did, what they did for me, and all the love and spirit and heart I put in the music, a lot of times it didn't take, as Lou would say. It didn't
take. Bruce Springsteen says it really best. He said you have to have the right song, mm-hmm. the right producer, everything that goes along with making mm-hmm. a hit. It's just not recording a
right.
great record. And that was the difference that I saw in Phil Spector.
Mm-hmm.
He did it all. He
yeah.
knew where he was going to promote. He knew about, you know, paying them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make them play the record. You have to play them records till they are so ingrained. And as a disc jockey, I know you know that.
Mm-hmm.
As being, you know, working in the business, you have to play
Although
that
I never
record.
Took payola, darling.
Okay. All right, that's
At least
fine.
I'm not admitting to it.
Well, you know, you
not
have to
radio.
play that music till kids have no choice but to like
right.
it.
Well, in your case, the real problem, as much as anything, was that Phil Spector didn't put your name on the record.
And
you
not
did
only
have
that,
those
Phil
hits.
Spector was not interested in making his artists stars. Mm-hmm. It was about Phil Spector.
Power.
Now, Mary, when yes. did you record your first major session?
Oh, God. My first major session was at Capitol Records with Bobby Darin. And I was 14 and a half, getting ready to be 15. And
This is around Splish Splash time?
No, this is after Splish Splash time. And Darlene and Fenita James so lovingly took me under their wing and let me sing background sessions with them at Capitol. And it was at those sessions where Mr. Darin heard me, this voice that was loud after they pushed me back so many times and said, "Who is that?" He said, "Oh, that's Mary. We just take a step back, baby." Well, I stepped back, and they played the track again, and I was too loud again. And Darlene said, "Well, baby, just step back a little bit more." I stepped back some more, and before I knew it, I was almost out the door. But he heard something in my voice, and before I knew it, he had signed me to his company within Capitol. Those were my first singles and recordings, was with Capitol Lady.
But you also sang with Ray Charles?
Absolutely.
In the Raylettes?
Absolutely, and I know I did not let Ray. Let me help you with that before you ask me that.
Because he was notorious.
No, they said, "Mary, you know, you sung with Ray Charles. You know, you had to let Ray." I said, "No, I was too busy letting the conductor, who I married and was married to for 32 years before he left this earth."
That protected you.
That protected me very much.
Now, how did the Blossoms even get together? Were they the kids that you grew up with?
No, the Blossoms was already a group. They sung with, they had the name, Capitol gave them the name, the Blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
They had a manager called, his name was Eddie Bill, and he was also a vocal coach, which was very, very good. I was singing at a wedding at St. Paul Baptist Church. One of the girls in the choir was getting married, and she asked me to sing for the wedding, and I did. And the Blossoms were in the wedding party, and that's where they heard me sing. And they were trying to replace one of the other girls who was about to have a baby, and they asked me if I would sing with their group. And
then you took over.
I took over. I asked my mother and father first if I could, and I guess they didn't think it would really amount to anything because I was only 16.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, okay, we'll let her go. And plus, in those days, if you did, my father knew where I was going, my mother knew where I was going, who was going to be there, and the whole bit. And plus, the girls were 3 years older than I was, so they knew all their parents. And the biggest thing that we had to do, we had to call when we got there.
That's right.
And call when we were on our way
That's
back home.
Right.
So you know how long it takes
Those were the
to
rules.
Get home. Those were the rules.
Right.
But they were already an established, matter of fact, they used to be the Dreamers. Richard Berry and mm-hmm. the Dreamers. Mm. That's who they sang
Uh-oh,
with.
Oh, get out of the car.
Oh, no.
Darlene Love and Mary Clayton are my guests. By the way, they'll be doing a New York Times talk tonight at 7 p.m.
Yes.
Also with us is Morgan Neville, who's the director of 20 Feet from Stardom, which opens this Friday at the Angelica and the Eleanor Bunin Theater on 65th Street. Morgan, do you make sense of what happened to these two? I mean, they obviously could have been stars. Was it simply a matter of just not getting the right material?
It's so many things. It's not just material because, you know, listening to this Best of Mary Clayton CD that's out. You know, I love those
songs. Well, everybody
songs.
Knows Mary Clayton's voice because they know her from Gimme Shelter.
Yeah, probably the greatest.
And everything else.
Yeah, probably the greatest backup performance of all time. It's really a duet, you know, and that performance is, you know, as great as they come.
But, and you did that in your pajamas?
Yeah, a pair of pink silk pajamas. Let's get it right. And a Chanel scarf on my head.
What happened? They called you?
Well, they called me in the middle of the night. Jack Nietzsche called me in the middle of the night and said that these guys were in town called the Rolling somebody. And before he could get out who they were, we were saying, well, we really don't care who they are. It's kind of late. And then my husband took the phone and said, man, what's going on? You called the Marriott almost 12:30 at night. Who are these people and what is this session? He said, well, these are the Rolling, and he couldn't get together the last name, even though he had worked with them, I'm told. And we need somebody to come and to do a duet with them. And we think Mary can do it, and I think this would be good for Mary. So Curtis and Jack talked for a minute, and before I knew it, I was getting up out of my bed with my pregnant belly with my beautiful silk pajamas on, and I had those puffy, you know, those come-get-me-if-you-can slippers with the puffs on the top. I had those on and a Chanel scarf and my little mink coat that I'd bought. And he said, well, we're going to send the car for you. So they sent the car, and I swooped out. And I was gone for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours, and got to the studio. And here are these guys, these wow-looking guys, these Englishmen, you know. Hello, love. Are you married? I said, yeah, I'm married. What do you want me to sing? So they take me behind the booth and, you know, play the track for me and show me what they want me to sing. I sing it.
Wait, were you surprised by the words, rape and murder?
Well, when I got to the rape and the murder, I was okay with, oh, children is just a shot away. But when you got to the rape and the murder, I said, well, what does that have to do with the song? So they told me what it had to do with the song. I said, oh, that kind of makes sense. But it was so high, I was afraid that I was going to wet myself because my belly was a little heavy. And I was. And so they gave me a stool to kind of lean on. And then I looked up, and here's Mick on one side, Keith on the other side with the lips and the bit. And I'm hollering, rape, murder's just a shot away, and almost wetting myself. And I said, okay, I did it once. Then we did it again. And I said, well, you know, you can't get the one more time of the rape and the murder because this is very, very high. So I did what I had to do, and I saw them hooting and hollering back in the booth. So I wonder, what are these white boys hooting and hollering about? So then I found out what they were hooting and hollering about when I went back to hear it. So I told them thank you and good night, and I was going back to my warm spot.
And then we're surprised, I assume, when it just took off the way that it did.
Within
and it
a
wound
month.
Up it wound up with you going on pretty much every Rolling Stones tour after
everything.
That.
I mean, we did everything, you know.
Well, what did you think when you heard it? Did you think, wow, this really is something special?
I knew it was something special, and I knew it was really, really good. But, you know, you never know what to expect when you do music. I mean, you do one project, and just like Darlene said, next session, you know, what are we doing next? You don't ponder on what you've already done, you know. So when I heard it, and then it started getting all this airplay, and everybody's calling, and, you know, we want Mary, and you call Lou's office. Can we get Mary to sing on this? Can we get Mary to sing on that? And that's where all really, really all the good session work started to come.
Yeah. Darlene, I assume the same is with you. You do a record, it's fabulous, mm-hmm. but to you it's just the last track that you recorded. Mm-hmm.
And that's what they remember. We say the flavor of the week.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of people, when people try to get us to remember all the sessions that we've done, it's impossible because 9 out of 10 were flops. Mm-hmm. You only remember the hits that you sing on.
And you don't want to talk about those.
No, well, you don't remember them. We didn't remember them.
Well, your name often doesn't even appear on the record.
Never. Our songs just started appearing on records maybe the last 10 years.
Now, you quit singing for a while, despite the fact that you were, to people like me, you were a superstar.
Well, I quit because of the fact that I could not work as a crystal because I was not a crystal, and that's what was confusing. And producers didn't want to hire me because I wouldn't say formally of the crystals. I said, I'm not a crystal. That's not my thing. I had my hits, but they weren't as big as the crystals' hits, even though it was my voice. And it was Bill Medley who I was dating at the time, told me, I was 40 years old, you're either going to start now being a solo artist or be a background singer the rest of your life. And now, made a decision, but before that is when there was just no work at all.
Was Bill Medley upset that you never closed your eyes anymore when you kissed his lips?
Oh, now you're trying to get dirty.
Okay, next question.
Mary, how did you come to spell your name that way?
Your husband Alton is here, my brother. You don't want, you want to talk to him. You don't want to linger on that,
bro. Did you sing on that song?
Which one?
You've lost that love and feeling.
I sung on your love and feeling.
I was just quoting from
No. Do you remember Brown Eyed Woman?
Yes.
That was written about me and Bill.
Well.
Thank you.
So, you know, but the whole thing was I didn't know if I could. If there was an audience, mm-hmm. I was more afraid of that than anything. Mm-hmm. If I had an audience, and I found out that I did have an audience, and believe me when I tell you, it was not easy. It was every step I took being a solo artist was a challenge.
And then you came back, mm-hmm. you reunited with your Blossoms bandmates, and then every Christmas, David Letterman pretty much changed your life, didn't he?
I moved to New York because of Steve Van Zandt. He talked me into moving to New York, and we were doing a show called Leader of the Pack at the Bottom Line, and Paul Schaefer was playing Phil Spector, and he invited David down to see the show, and David saw the show, and one night on the David Letterman show, he said, Paul, you know that girl that sings that Christmas song? That's the greatest Christmas song I ever heard. We need to get her on the show. This was their conversation on the show. Then from that day to this year, it'll be 27 years this year. It'll be 27 years that I'm singing.
A lot of years.
Mary, how did you come to spell your name M-E-R-R-Y?
I didn't. My parents did that. Well, I was born Christmas Day, first of all.
Ah.
So they thought that they would give me a little Christmas in my life and in theirs.
The Best of Mary Clayton is coming out on Ode Records June 25th.
Yes.
What's on it?
Oh, my God, everything from the Mary Clayton album to the... do you have it in front of you, sweetheart?
I don't, no.
There it is right there.
Ah. Oh, boy, these are all a lot of hits.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to come out on Ode.
Ode, Sony Ode.
On the 25th.
Tony Legacy.
And Darlene's book is coming back out next week,
yeah,
right?
Well, we had you here for it when you published it years ago.
Yes, yes, yes.
Have you been in touch with the singers that you have profiled since? Because the movie's getting a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
We didn't mention Lisa Fisher and so many others.
Yeah, Tata Vega and so many, Claudia Lanier. Absolutely. I mean, they've all been helping me spread the gospel about this documentary.
Amen.
And
we've been all over the world.
Yep.
Well,
everywhere.
If you've been enjoying this conversation, there are a lot of more great stories in this documentary called 20 Feet from Stardom. We're going to go out with Darlene singing something that David Letterman fans will recognize. The film opens this Friday at the Angelica and the Eleanor Bunin Theater on 65th Street. And a reminder that Darlene Love and Mary Clayton will be doing a New York Times talk tonight at 7 p.m., although I gather it's sold out. You can always find a seat or two, right?
Yes, for you?
Thank you both so much. Thank you,
thank you
all three of you
for
being on
us.
Our show.